Whoa. Hello. And welcome to episode 113 of the City Brew Tours podcast, where we feature the best beer scenes from around the United States. I'm Brian. Of course, I'm your host, back again for another wonderful month of the show. Happy to be featuring one of my absolute favorite cities in the country this month, Portland, Oregon. And we'll get more into that during our interview. It's one interview with multiple people. It's not multiple interviews. Happy also to be joined by recurring host, friend of the pod, and an actual a friend. He helped host the Bend, Oregon episodes that we did just about a year ago. Please help me welcome Tom Ruholt. How's it going, Tom?
Going well. It's good to be here. Good to be back on. Good to drink some great beer from my home city, my birthplace, my place that I never get too far away from for too long.
Well, it is good to have you. Good to have your local expertise. Even though I've visited Portland multiple times, all times where I hung out with you. And how you doing? How's your week been? How's the beginning? How was the end of July and now the beginning of August?
Oh, it's been really good because I did a lot of traveling in June and July. So I've actually been home for about 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. After doing a lot of traveling, a little bit for work, a little bit for pleasure. It's been nice to be in one spot for an extended period of time. So, definitely enjoying it. Weather's been great here. We haven't had too many, above 85 degree days, in the last forever. I don't do well past 82. We're happy. It's been a good summer so far, and I'm curious to see if this area is going to get to where it has been the last couple of summers and the over 100s, where we had a string of days, which obviously you being from the East Coast, you get more 100 days than we do over here, but, or maybe not, but you get the humidity with your heat. So
we get a lot of, feels like 100. We don't get actual 100. It'll be like 92, feels like 104 because of the humidity.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be like, I don't know that I could find a place where I could hide deep enough in a hole to get away from that heat.
Yeah. It's rough. The air conditioners are constantly running. You're dipping your hat in the bucket of ice water and throwing it back on your head. And it is all fruitless because you cannot escape humidity. It is like a warm, mm-hmm. disgusting blanket that you carry around with you all day long. But we have finally gotten reprieve from that here in the wonderful city of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where we had, I think the high today was like in the 80s. It was comfortable. I didn't run the air conditioner at all. Like, great day.
Yeah, but I congratulations. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it.
Congrats to me. Yes, certainly. And as we've mentioned, we are featuring this month the wonderful city of Portland, Oregon, one of America's beer scenes, like one of America's original beer scenes, and a beer scene that has been thriving for decades on end with countless threads and stories to back up that history, and a just multitude of, I don't think I use that word right, just a cavalcade of excellent breweries producing wonderful beers. I think one of the times that I was in Portland with you, we actually drank hot beer from a brewery, and it was phenomenal. Like,
Cascade, the House of Sours, man. That was
yes. Yeah,
absolutely.
I believe it was a Hot Creek. And when people, when I say hot, I don't mean spicy. I mean like actually served warm, like warm apple cider. And it warmed your bones and your blood. just like warm apple cider, but had that creakiness to it.
Absolutely. It was perfect. It was, if I recall, it was a nice February night where it needed that extra warmth.
It was. It was, Tom. You know, it was late February 2020. That trip was also the same time that the first case of COVID was discovered in the United States. And can you guess which state that was in?
I'm guessing Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
No, it was
I went from state to
It was you. It was you guys. It was Oregon. It was like, oh boy, I feel really comfortable being here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, we're the gift that keeps on giving. That's for sure.
It was a great trip. It was a fantastic trip. Both of my trips to Oregon have been fantastic, and I'm just so excited to feature the breweries that we are featuring this month. Some of my literally absolute favorite breweries I've ever been to in the country, and without a doubt, like a top three beer scene for me, and a top three city in the country. I freaking love Portland. So very, very excited about this month. Last month was great. I love Brooklyn too. Had a lot of fun talking about those breweries and those beers, but new month, new co-host, new city. We're going to get into it. So we're featuring two breweries tonight. We're doing a format change up. If you haven't caught on to that yet, if you haven't seen the postings, the news releases, the information that's out there, we are switching to two a month, and we're doing two breweries per episode. So tonight we are featuring the wonderful Portland breweries Threshold Brewing and Blending and Von Ebert. Von Ebert was founded in 2018 by a father-son duo, the Toms, Tom and Tom. It's actually named for the family matriarch, Grandma Ebert, and Von Ebert literally or loosely translates to House of the Boar. So if you're part of our beer club, shout out to you. But you could also see the cans of Von Ebert are adorned with a boar, and that's where that comes from. Pittsburgh connection here. Von Ebert opened their Pearl District location in the former home of Fatheads, which is a brewery that got its start. Here in Pittsburgh. Yeah, we're just all trying to tie it back to Pittsburgh.
No, well, here we go. No, but Von Ebert was actually the Fatheads franchise of sorts before they broke up and then reopened and rebranded. So the continuity. So Tom and Tom had they wanted to start a brewery in Portland, and the best way they could do that was by joining forces with Fatheads, and then things went different ways, and they started their own. And I would say Fatheads gave them a very good start, but then they accelerated and shot way beyond their. They brought everything back to roots, and amazing beer for sure with that.
Yeah, from an outsider's perspective, they have certainly eclipsed the Fatheads day. But thank you for that, you know, wonderful context that I am unable to provide because I don't live in Portland. Also, we are featuring Threshold Brewing and Blending, a brewery that opened in 2019 in Montevilla. Right?
Montevilla.
No, okay. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
We're villaing it. This one, yeah.
Hey, we have a town that's spelled like Versailles, but we pronounce it Versailles out here. So all for it. In Montevilla by a husband and wife duo. Consistently listed as another one of the must visit breweries in the Portland area. And we're gonna be drinking a beer from each of these wonderful breweries. We're gonna be having Von Ebert's Volatile Substance and Threshold's Jen's Baled Grisette. We're also going to be joined by a few wonderful guests. So please join us in welcoming Becca Lynn, a brewer at Von Ebert, and Yarick and Sarah. Oh boy, we went over this. Shemainsky, co-owners at Threshold. How bad did I mess up that last name?
I think you got there, but I'll wait for Yarick and Sarah to critique your pronunciation.
To correct me.
Yeah.
Hi, everyone.
Hello, welcome.
Yarick and Sarah, how bad did I mess up that last name pronunciation?
Not at all.
It was good.
I mean, we talked about it like literally 5 minutes ago, so you did good.
We did, and then I got to it in the copy, and I was like, oh boy. I'm very glad to hear that. Thank you all so much for joining us for this special episode. As always, we're going to get started with our quick sip questions. We're going to go back and forth. We have five questions here. We're going to pose these as roundtable questions, but if Becca, you want to take the lead, and then we'll jump over to Sarah and Yarick. Let's do it. These are fast questions. We want fast answers to help us get to know you fast. So, favorite beer that's not from your brewery?
Bottle substance. Easy.
Don't spill the Grisette.
Quick, yeah. I don't think either of us are lying.
Nope. Actually, sorry, I have to change my mind. The Grodzicki, that threshold makes. That's fine. Your Grodz is one of my most favorite beers.
She's torn between two of our beer. And likewise, I think that Bonnie Bird's barrel program and kind of wild program is underrated, or it's some of my favorite stuff that that Portland's putting out.
Thank you.
I love it. I love the Mutual Admiration Club. It just it's a perfect expression of the Portland beer scene. To everyone, if you could resurrect one Portland brewery from the past, which would it be?
Oh, it'd be the Commons.
Commons.
I
mean,
I knew that. That was no question. That's always number one answer.
Yeah, that's the consensus. I mean, I never went, and that's kind of like, you know, that's in some ways Von Ebert's origin story. That's where my boss Sam Pecoraro and the former other head brewer of Von Ebert, Sean Burke, that's where, you know, they opened it together. And I've heard tall tales of that brewery, and the fact that I never got to see it, it haunts me.
I love the synchronicity already.
Already grieving Hair of the Dog.
I almost wore my Hair of the Dog shirt today because I don't know why I didn't, other than it's just sitting there on the floor next to me. But Hair of the Dog, definitely a historic, very historic brewery.
Heck yeah. Favorite Portland dive?
I mean, no one would know.
I'd say, I mean, to go to the, you know, the Threshold neighborhood, I love Tinker Tavern or Reel 'em In, two great divier bars.
True. Jelly
Rogers.
Yeah. Sandy Hut. I don't know.
Sandy Hut, yeah.
Sandy Hut is actually going to be celebrating their 100th anniversary. It's a milestone. Yeah, it's one of really good ones.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Amazing. Yeah.
That's amazing. Favorite place you've ever traveled?
For me, Yarek's Polish, and he grew up in Poland, and I didn't know much about Poland when I met him, aside from, you know, horrible history. And when I visited for the first time, I absolutely fell in love with that country and with Yarek too. And we go back almost every other year. That's kind of the goal. And every time I go back, I just fall more and more in love with that country. And it's variety of landscape, it's up and coming beer culture as well.
Yeah,
so that's really for me. Question.
Yeah,
he probably.
And for both of us, you would probably agree. We went to Belgium for about a week, and we did some brewery touring over there and tried some really good beers. And we both love funky sour beers.
This was over a decade ago now.
But
yeah,
that was our favorite as well.
Anything with great beer, which is everywhere.
Yeah. I would probably say Auckland, New Zealand. I went a couple of years back and I just had like the time of my life. I think that the beer scene is interesting. Like, I wasn't in beer at the time, unfortunately. I want to go back now and just for the hops. But the beer scene was like very much up and coming at that time. But just like the overall like culture, everybody was just so excited to have tourists around, and it's a very friendly city and very easy to navigate, and I had a wonderful time.
Now to my favorite quick sip question, and probably the most relevant place that we ask this in. Has anybody ever seen a Sasquatch?
You know, I've seen a lot of tall, dark-haired, long-haired brewers, but I have not seen a Sasquatch.
That's a good, I mean, maybe that's what it, maybe that's actually what it is.
I think that's what it is.
It's been built up over time, but I think that's basically what it was in the beginning. And it's, you know, yeah, some big hairy brewer was just mistaken.
Well groomed.
For its Sasquatch.
Yeah. 30 years ago, somebody saw John Mayer in the woods and they were like, oh my God, it's Sasquatch.
Yeah. I literally think that's what happened.
Well, with that solved, we're going to jump into the beer. So as Brian's so well showing off, he's going to pour here. I poured mine pre-game here. But let's start out with Jens Bale Grisette. Sarah, what can you tell us about this beer? What should we know about this beer?
Why don't you start with just the profile? And I'll tell you the story behind the name.
Mm-hmm. So the style of the Grisette, in our case, means very easy, refreshing, bright, a little bit fruity, clean, easy drinking beer. It's one of our OG beers. It's really simple beer, which we somehow managed to execute pretty good. It's just the grist is pretty much wheat and pilsner malts. There is a little bit of hop presence in it, but it's not dominant. Some of the beer profile comes from the yeast that we use. We've been playing with Quake yeast in case of this Grisette. The beer was meant to be pretty easy, refreshing summer table beer that goes down very easy. It's one of those styles that is not very recognizable. It's been getting a little bit more and more traction, which we're super happy about it. And sometimes it just takes a little bit of the persuasion, the tap room, which we know from experience. People often don't recognize the style. They don't know what's behind it. But once we let them try it, they're in love from the first sip. That's what I can say about this beer.
And it is it's a Belgian style, and it dates back quite a bit in time. I think it's translated to Little Gray, and originates from like the mining countries and or mining culture in Belgium from maybe a couple hundred years ago. And Yarek said it was one of our OG beers. We opened in January 2019. It was actually our first beer we ever brewed on our system. And back then we were, you know, we'd been building out our space and desperately trying to open for over 18 months. We finally got the permits for our system behind us. We could finally brew, and we had no money left. And this was a beer that had, you know, a lighter hop profile on the ingredient side. So it's like a little bit less expensive. And we're like, okay, let's do it. No one's doing a Grisette. Let's do a Grisette. We can afford it.
We've done a little bit of experimentation, and when we started dialing a new system, we wanted to like use something lighter in case of any technical difficulties. That's one of the main reasons as well.
And initially, I mean, we brewed a Grisette. I don't think back then we would have predicted that we're still brewing it and that we've won awards for it and that it's become kind of beloved out here. But so with that in mind, when we were naming it, we weren't thinking super long term. And at the top of our mind was this guy. It's actually called Jens Bale. Jens was our electrician, who wasn't. And so at the time we were opening, like, this is why we're behind schedule. This is why. And so we just kind of flippantly named it that. And
name quickly.
And so, but like, once Jens Bale, and then it's there. And the beer turned out to be so good. And then Jens, he's a very nice guy, even though he left us high, like a little bit high and dry. And he and his whole crew actually surprised him. They surprised him. They brought him to the brewery. This was in the first like month or so that we'd open. They'd all like printed and made these bright red shirts that said Jens Bale and like their company. He arrived unsuspecting. They were all there in the shirts. He had to wear a shirt, and they all drank Jens Bale like the entire night. And it was the best night. That was heartwarming, and that was the very first month that we were like up and running. But it's fun to see like that beer be well received, and also just, I think you've tweaked a little bit along the ways, but it's just a really, I get a lot of floral notes. I think it's a bit bready, and we have ended up using it quite a bit in our wine barrel age program as well. So we do some like funky stuff with it. We do some, right now we've got some of it aging, I believe, in a gin barrel. So it's like, it's versatile as a base, but it's just beautiful as a beer as well.
It certainly is. I could see how this could take on barrel character really well. Mm. It stands up on its own. It's a wonderfully enjoyable beer. I've drank far too much of it already. God, yeah, it's just great.
I'm glad you like it.
I am a big fan of a grisette. I worked at a brewery once where we had a grisette on, and having to explain it to people and get them to understand it's in the farmhouse family. And if you like wheat beers, if you like Belgian whites, this might be the go-to for you. And then once people try it, they're like, oh, I love grisette. So thank you. Thank you for brewing a grisette. Thank you for keeping a grisette on all the time, because more people should know about the wonders of the style.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Let's zoom out a little bit and talk about Oregon at large, because Oregon breweries consistently take home a lion's share of awards at festivals like GABF, the World Beer Cup, and this doesn't make sense because, of course, the Oregon breweries take home the awards at the Oregon Beer Awards. But besides loading the panels with judges and friends of the show like Natalie Rose Baldwin, what would you credit the continuous success of Oregon breweries in those competitions?
Our own internal. I mean, just having so many amazing breweries within a stone's throw. Everyone's trying everyone's beers. Everyone's knows they have to do better to succeed in this town. And so I think that's, you know, that's why we keep producing better and better and better beers and keep winning awards.
Yeah, it's a friendly competition. It's a lot of information sharing amongst different breweries. It's accessibility to fresh ingredients, because we have, you know, vast hop fields. We have few maltsters in the neighborhood. So just being in Pacific Northwest, having access to, you know, those producers, farmers, to their knowledge base, as well as like people that work with them and kind of try to educate everyone as well. It creates this beautiful, what's the good word, like mecca for development, for creativity, pushing the boundaries.
Yeah, totally. I mean, this city is so deeply collaborative in nature, and it's also like, everybody's really receptive to feedback. And it's the kind of place where like we'll have brewers in and they'll text. I mean, if they're my friends, they'll text me. If it's, you know, friends of my bosses, they'll text my bosses and be like, from time to time, they're like, yo, I had this beer and it tasted awesome. And sometimes like, yo, I had this beer and like, I picked up a little bit of diacetyl. And like, that gives us a really rare opportunity to receive like in the moment feedback on beers that we're constantly developing and constantly trying to make better. And then we go and we pull that keg and we taste it for ourselves. And we're like, what is this person tasting that we missed? And it just helps us like think so much more critically, so like currently about everything that we make. And it's also just that like, you know, if you want to make the best beer, you have to be always comparing what you're making to what's around you. And Portland just has, I mean, Oregon in general really has like consistently such quality beer that it helps us stay sharp. Like it helps us seek a lot of inspiration, honestly, from everyone else.
You guys are literally, I mean, Von Ebert is literally two blocks away from three different breweries. Mm-hmm. Threshold is literally around the corner from another brewery where, you know, comparison wise, someone can buy a beer and drink it and a minute later buy another beer at your place and drink it as well and have that as a comparison as well. So you have to keep that, you know, you have to keep your game up. And like you said, there is friendly competition. Like everybody interacts with everyone really well. And I mean, yeah, it's pretty amazing what you can have when you have that friendly competition for sure.
I guess it's competition, but everyone just wishes everyone else well. And we're all, I mean, we're friends with Becca. Like we know, like everyone knows everyone, everyone hangs out with everyone. Everyone's overjoyed to see everyone succeed. And I know that comes through in the beer.
Totally. I mean, I think this, this idea of like success for one brewery in Oregon is success for Oregon beer across the board. And I think that the Oregon Brewers Guild has a lot to do with that. I think that they really encourage this kind of like shared successful like mentality, which makes, I mean, it makes all kinds of competitions more exciting because you see Oregon win and you're like, that's amazing. But it makes Oregon Beer Awards just like silly with excitement because everybody's excited about everything the entire day. It's great.
Well, and Pink Boots Society for you all as well. I know, I know you're all involved with that. I mean, it's great to see that collaboration that goes along in that arena as well. So always so many different support systems that are there as well.
Definitely. Yeah. Like I know Becca would agree, like the network that the women in beer have in Portland is pretty like strong, you know, and there's lots of us, I guess. So we're even more looking out for one another and meeting up regularly. And I don't know that, you know, all the guys in brewing are like going together and like, you know, hanging out and like, patting each other on the back, you know, and like we have that. It's a great, I remember when we first opened and I learned about Pink Boots and joined it, instant like accessibility to the other breweries that we didn't necessarily have as newcomers. So I would say it's like, it's been invaluable for us.
Yeah, totally. I mean, Pink Boots for me is like, from the second I got to Portland and I was joining this chapter, I've just been like, there's so much, shared knowledge and like shared experience, and everybody just finds everyone else so smart and so like interesting, and we all are just here to support one another and to make and to like really be intentional about making space in the industry for one another. It's not a passive thing, it's very active, and I think it's been a huge, I think Pink Boots reflects the overall culture of Oregon beer and Oregon brewing. And I think the same is true the other direction.
Cool. That's great. I think now we've talked about Sarah and Yark's wonderful beer. I think it's a great time to talk about our featured Von Ebert beer, the well-awarded, illustrious, and frankly, delightful Volatile Substance. This is a beer we're very familiar with in the City Brew Tours, formerly Brews Less Traveled, also 12 Beers of Christmas World. We've actually featured Volatile Substance on the 12 Beers of Christmas before. And Becca, what would you like to tell us about this beer?
Oh boy. You know, first beer I ever brewed with Von Ebert. It's one of the first beers I ever had with Von Ebert. So in general, within our company, within the brewing team, we really strive to make beer that's evolves around a concept rather than a recipe. And my bosses are going to laugh if they hear me say that on this podcast, because that's what they say to us all the time. But, you know, when we were, you know, when my bosses were first thinking about Volatile Substance, they wanted kind of like, you know, this West Coast, Pacific Northwest style IPA. They want it to be really clear. They want it to be pretty dry. They were looking for, like a lot of kind of like pine, sticky resin, a lot of like grapefruit, ruby red grapefruit, and a lot of like big blueberry note, a little bit of blackberry, a little bit of raspberry. And that's what they're really targeting. And so it's like the recipe is as fluid as it needs to be in order to keep this concept stable. And, you know, for the most part, that means that the recipe itself has been stable. But if something happens and all of a sudden we're just getting a horrible crop year of Mosaic or of Simcoe, and those are two of, you know, our major hops in this beer, we are like, we're not tied to the ingredient. We're tied to what the final product looks like, smells like, tastes like, feels like, all that. I mean, this is one of my favorite beers that we make. It's lucky for us that the beer itself is physically easy to brew. We have some beers that are more demanding to brew, and so those are a little less fun. And to make this much of a beer that's challenging to make would be annoying, I think. But this beer is great to brew, and we are all just like constantly thinking about it all the time. It's everywhere for us. And there's also, I guess the name is after a lyric in a Violent Femmes song that just came to my boss, Sam, one day, and he was like, that's a perfect name for an IPA.
Yes, this is this is a beer I've had many times before. I love the Jens Bayode. It's a beer that I've had for the first time in working with this podcast, but Volatile Substance is a beer I've had many times prior. And I would absolutely say one of my favorite IPAs in the world. It's so well done. And I love to hear about the fluidity of the recipe. It seems like such a perfect encapsulation for what everybody has already talked about with the scene and the breweries being so fluid and willing to iterate and revisit things. It just seems so much like a representation of what you all have talked about with the Portland beer scene.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. I think that like fluidity and being open to new development and to novelty is like kind of, encapsulates Portland. It's definitely, I think, a big part of our like ethos as a company. And I think it's generally the people who we really admire across, across the country and across the world, and beer and brewing have that same kind of like ethos.
Becca, did you already talk about the GABFs that Volatile Substance dragged in? Because I'm picturing
Thank
right
you,
now,
Sarah.
Because I can't get it out of my head ever.
Thank you.
Their head brewer, Sam Pecoraro, when he's watching GABF, the whole brewery like erupts and he's going nuts. And I think everyone in Portland was just like delighted for you guys at that
Best
time.
Best moment ever, yep.
Thank you. It was, so that was like maybe 3 weeks before I started. So I really came in right at the right time, right on the coattails. it was like at the very end of the competition. This was COVID year, so everybody's watching it here at the Pearl at our location. And Sam and our owner, Tom, were in the bathroom. I think they're kind of just like consoling each other, being like, oh, we haven't won anything yet. And like, they're just, I think, kind of like talking through like, okay, next steps, like how can we be better next year? And then, so they're like walking down the hallway away from the bathroom and everybody else starts erupting in like the middle of the tap room. And Jason and Eric, my other bosses, it just comes sprinting up to Sam and they're kind of like jumping around. And Sam like thought they were kidding. Sam thought they were pulling a really mean prank. And then when he realized they weren't kidding, like there's a video of it on our Instagram that like when I'm feeling sad or feeling low, it's what I watch. It's the most heartwarming thing in the world.
The understood like biggest category at GABF. It was for like West Coast IPA. And that's incredible. And and you guys have gone ahead and won for Pilsner since then. And like, you're very versatile. You're very good. Good job on you.
to add context to everybody at home that don't haven't picked up on what we're talking about, Volatile Substance in 2021 took home the gold medal in the most entered, most contentious category. Just straight up American IPA, and you win gold in that category. You're doing something right. There's no doubt.
Yeah, it's a big category, and it's something that like we look forward to it the most, because every year we look at everybody who wins, we look at if we get the information who makes it to the final table, and we seek out those breweries and we seek out those people, and we're like, we have a million questions to ask you. It was a very exciting win. And I think I'm sure we're going to talk about this later, but talking about the potential oversaturation of craft beer in Portland, I think from like a business standpoint, medals, if you ask our salesperson, medals don't matter. If you ask our owners, they'd probably say something else.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I feel like it's the opposite. Like for the salesperson, medals matter more.
I think it goes 50-50. I think sometimes Nathan's like, or, you know, our sales guy's like, I think like individual consumers care, bars don't really care.
Very good.
The thing I think about with metals is, and I've seen it, you know, I've seen it happen with Bonnie Burt too, especially after that GABF win, was just the cloud of breweries that was suddenly interested in collaborating and meeting. So I think that's pretty like an amazing thing about a metal, especially on like a national or international scale, is that you just end up working with some pretty amazing people and learning from them too.
Yeah. I mean, I think we definitely have met people who wouldn't have necessarily known our name. You know, there's so many breweries out there, they wouldn't have known our name, or they wouldn't have like maybe seen us as people who they'd be compatible in terms of working with. I think the same thing is true after. So we won for our German style Pilsner, won gold at World Beer Cup in this May. And that was a huge medal for us. I think that was one of the ones we cared the most about. And I had a friend who works in the industry, not in Portland, somewhere else. And they were like, oh, well, I think we're going to have a Lagerfest, like, you know, later this year. Maybe you guys should just join our Lagerfest. Are you guys like lager brewers now? And I'm like, I think so. It's like, you know, you don't just necessarily stumble across medals like that. I think medals are great. They're fun. They make you feel good.
Medals are good.
Absolutely. Both breweries are not unknown for winning medals. It's like, in running City Brew Tours, and we have tours that go to these breweries and whatnot, Threshold and Von Eber are at the top of our most, I respected is probably the right word, but from our tour guests and whatnot, the beers that you guys produce, they're the ones that get the most rave reviews about. So it's like Threshold constantly, like, thank you for taking us there. Cause I mean, it's not, your space isn't huge, right? So finding you is a little bit more difficult than going to the Pearl and finding Von Eber. But, you know, along with the likes of Upright and others that are clearly well known and so forth, that people always want to go to. Yeah, you're slow, like Threshold slowly becoming hidden gem to being well known. And just like when you win an IPA medal at GABF, Von Ebert goes from being, you know, known in the city to being known everywhere. So the trajectory of both of these breweries, part of the reason why I thought about you both being in this box was just because all the potential that you have and the already amazing beers that you have with that. So that's super great with that. I'm going to steal Brian's next question because this kind of leads from that. What excites you about the future of beer in Portland? Just knowing where we were in 2015 to where we are kind of now, because 2015 was kind of the height. We had more than 100 breweries in town. We contracted a little bit since then. But we've had a lot of the history of, like, a lot of our brewers have moved on to taking over their own breweries, like Natalie moving over to Wayfinder, which has a great history. Our pedigree is amazing, in my opinion. But what for you three individually, what do you see for the future of Portland and brewing here now that we're a little bit more less saturated, but still saturated with the way the market is, I guess, would be.
I know what I'm excited about, and I guess it's something that's been a theme of our entire existence, so I don't know anything different, but I don't think it has ever been different in the past, just maybe quicker now, but just the constant process of kind of reinvention and like pivoting, like COVID was a pivot, I guess, but now we're in this place where you have to pivot constantly, no matter what, just to stay like viable and successful and survive. And I think right now, like, what Portland is doing is, you know, developing each brewery is, if they can, opening a second location, a third location, or like, you know, in some cases, 10 locations, and figuring out the viability of that in terms of like increase sales of your own beer, kind of spreading your brand around to, you know, even like 20 miles or 15 miles where customers aren't going to be traveling to your tap room, go out to them. And so that's, for us, I think that, I mean, that's what we're actively working on right now. Bonnie Bird already has their two locations. So I'm sure they're thinking about an additional, I'm sure everyone is. And so that to me is like an exciting frontier. We've seen it work for breweries. We think it's going to work for us. And I think that's what's going to keep the numbers going the way we want them to in the next, you know, half a decade.
Yeah, we were really lucky to be able to open a, you know, small family-owned brewery in Portland. We've been seeing a little bit of the industry correction happening right now. And I feel like that's maybe a little bit of the ripple effect after the actual couple of years of COVID, when you can actually now start seeing certain things happening. And I find it healthy. I find it that, you know, like the industry that remains idle, that's not a good thing to be happening. But like with what's going on right now, you know, like the head brewers moving between different breweries, opening their own places, we continue seeing new breweries popping on the market. Or reinventing themselves, which is great. So there are good things coming to in the near future.
For sure.
Speaking of near future, I think everybody is super excited about the fresh hop season that is coming pretty rapidly right now.
It's about to sneak up on us. Have you guys started to get harvest notes and what's available to you all, so you can run down to the Salem area and then come back and throw them right into the boil and whatnot?
We're
all locked in. We have our pick windows, we have our brew schedule already arranged. It's coming up really quickly.
It's only about 5 weeks out, so
so if you haven't had a chance to try a fresh hop beer, you should come and visit Portland.
Come to Oregon or Washington and you're gonna have the best fresh hop beer of your life. It's so special, and everybody here is obsessed with it. You know, there are breweries who do 12. I think Barelick Brewing did 10 or 12 last year, and we can manage about 3, and then we're kind of like, okay, we're so overwhelmed. Fresh hops are, they're a labor of love for sure.
They're a labor of love, but you keep seeing breweries though like upping the ante every year, right? Like, so like, it used to be, you know, you just released one or like maybe, you know, maybe two. And of course, no one was canning them 5 years ago. And back then, it wasn't even considered a good idea to can fresh hop beers because they started to go. But COVID changed everything. Now everyone's canning them. Everyone wants to can fresh hop beers. And you start seeing breweries like really, like I think a brewery last year released like 10. So everyone's just, you know, like it's escalating, and there's an appetite for it out here. It's nuts. Totally. Like we'll start, you know, selling for distribution pre-orders soon, and they'll sell out before we even put out the beer.
Yep.
Very stressful for a brewer.
It's not my job.
Yeah, I mean,
for drink.
For the drinker, it's great. For the brewer, it's a headache. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of correct timing. But yeah, I mean, we pre-sale, like we pre-sale, basically we do a fresh hop volatile substance, and that, you know, sells every year. And we try to have a lot of fun with it, but we're also, I think we're all just like so nerdy about it that all we do is drink it and then compare it to last year. And like, we just like analyze it to a point of no return. But I'd say the addition of the fresh hop categories into Oregon Beer Awards has been super fun. And I think maybe Best of Craft Beer, somebody else has a fresh hop beer category as well. And so for those of us who are, you know, competition minded, it's always like this additional pressure of like, okay, make the beer, make it great, bottle it, and then send it into this competition. So just, it's all fun.
And then you get to walk into OBAs with a win. That's always nice.
It's always great to drink the fresh hop next to the one that was canned like 3 weeks before fresh hop went around to be able to compare the notes and actually see what a hop actually does. It's one thing that we're really, you know, lucky to have an opportunity to, for the non-brewer who aren't super tasters or super smellers or whatever, someone who doesn't brew myself, it's the way that I can get educated about what's the difference between, you know, what flavor comes out in a mosaic hop versus, you know, what you taste in an everyday sort of thing. You get that extra special note that just kind of stands out.
That actually, and I feel like we'll do this, and I think a lot of breweries do this, but, you know, take their flagship, like Bottle Substance, or for us, it's our Pivo Polish Pilsner that we always have on tap. Do a fresh hop version of it. Both of those are going to be on tap side by side, and that's a fun way to differentiate that, like, fresh hop flavor.
Totally. I mean, for us, at any given point, we'll have Volatile Substance in many iterations in the brewery. We'll have it, you know, just brewed. We'll have it pre-dry hop, post-dry hop, pre-crash, post-crash, you know, fresh hop, non-fresh hop. And so if you wanted to, you could just, my bosses want to, and they do, and we all do, walk around, and we just sample this same beer in like six different stages. And especially during fresh hop season, it's very, very fun to compare what a fresh hop Volatile Substance tastes like, you know, 5 days into fermentation versus a non-fresh hop beer 5 days into fermentation. And it's immediate. The difference is very immediate and very apparent. It's very cool.
Yes. Shout out to quality analysis. It's the best part about working at a brewery. Mm-hmm. So to everyone, Tom included, other than the beer scene, what's one thing that you wish people knew about Portland?
Amazing beer scene. Amazing food scene.
Everyone does that too.
Wonderful people. Very bikeable.
Oh,
walkable. Amazing coffee.
Coffee.
You can access the nature within like 1 hour drive. If the season is right, you can surf on the coast within 1 hour, or you can go and snowboard the next day.
No one knows any of this. No one knows any. And I want to jump on that too, actually. Portland's bikeability. Okay, so I'm a biker, and like, people know that Portland's bikeable, but it is crazy bikeable. You can bike anywhere you want to be. You can get there faster than you're going to be on a car. It's so streamlined. It's to the point that I don't think I could ever move away. Not because of the beer, not because of the nature, not because of whatever. It's just like, I need that biking, and I don't find it in any other city.
As a biker as a biker in a poor biking city, I am jealous of Portland every time I go there. Oh, look at the bike lanes.
Yeah.
Look at all these people with bikes.
And the cars, well, you have to sometimes remind them, but they will respect you, and they'll, mm-hmm. Right away.
Totally. I just started biking in Portland, and for a long time I was nervous to go. I call it south of 84. You know, 84 is this freeway that kind of splits the city in half, north and south. And I live north of it, and I'd always call it going south. I was like, I'm really afraid to go south. And then I found like eight different like bike only bridges or bike only pathways along the waterfront or bike only streets that are totally blocked off to cross that freeway. And I was like, wow, what a dream. They make it so easy for you to have an option outside of driving your car. And it's fantastic. I will say, I'm a fair weather biker. I have not tackled biking in the rain yet. I think that might be the one drawback.
The best part about biking in the rain is that traffic is even worse. So there's like always an incentive.
Yeah.
You're gonna stream by a line of cars in traffic, and that's, you know, that'll get you through the winter.
Totally.
So, speaking of rain, my one thing to know about Portland is that we did not have a measurable drop of rain in July of 2023. So we haven't had any rain here. Everybody thinks it rains all the time. And it actually goes back into mid-June. And since May 15th, it looks like we've had 4 days with measurable rain. So
you looked it up.
Yep, I had the back. Yeah, that's the everybody come visit in December to March, so you don't come move here. But but if you want to spend, if you want to come bring your tourism dollars to Portland, come from July to September, and you will think you want to live here.
One more additional fact about that time of the year. Unbearable humidity is almost non-existent. We usually have maybe a few days every summer where you go outside and you're like, oh, it feels a little bit humid today.
Becca, I don't know if you shared your thing if it was just bikeability, but
I am seconding that. Specifically, we have a great Smashburger scene. If you care about Smashburgers, so I love food in general, but we have a lot of fantastic Smashburgers. And I mean, yeah, Threshold, you guys host that huge competition. And I think the burger scene in general is great. Smashburger scene is fantastic. That's something that I personally love about the city. And then in general, I think it's really easy to find community. I think that's something else I was going to say earlier that I think Threshold, you guys are absolutely phenomenal at, is building and fostering community within like the Montevilla neighborhood, but also just like community within this industry. Is that you guys are really connected to your customer base and to your neighborhood and your like physical location. I think probably better than most other breweries in Portland. And I think that it is such an asset and something that I really value about Portland and about the industry.
Man, I feel like that's like the compliment that means the very, very most. Thank you. That means a lot. Yeah. Thanks.
Well, it's all great. The bikeability, the no humidity, and of course the fostering of community relationships are all things that I admire about the wonderful city of Portland. Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for supplying beer for the show.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Thank you so much for inviting us.
I have some flight credits I need to use before the end of the year. Maybe I'll make it out there. If you want to follow along with either of the breweries we featured tonight, you can hit them up on Instagram. Von Ebert is at VE Brewing and Threshold is at Threshold Beer. I don't know if you're like me, but I keep trying to put another H in Threshold. Moral of the story is I'm terrible at spelling. So it's just Threshold. But yeah, at VE Brewing and at Threshold Beer on Instagram. Again, thank you to both the breweries for supplying beer, not only for the show, but for our beer club. If you're interested in joining the beer club, helping to support the show, and also getting the benefits of the beer club, head over to shop.citybrewtours.com. You can check out the subscription options there, see what kind of perks and benefits come with being a part of a beer club that is associated with the oldest brewery tour company in North America. Check out citybrewtours.com for our tour locations. I think we're over 20 tour locations right now. And yeah, we'll be back later this month with another episode featuring two more of Portland's wonderful breweries, both Bayerlich and Old Town. And until then, everybody stay safe, be kind, and of course, support local breweries. Cheers, everyone.
Cheers. Thank you.
Cheers.